you have been sitting here as a speaker on the training and training infrastructure. And because it was so important for us to be there, I left the chair of the women there now. It's only there that the meeting started. So I really apologize for this. Today we are having this meeting, and I think some of the people who are here do know why we have this meeting. It's about two critical issues that affect women in South Africa. The first one is about the Law Reform Commission's report on adult prostitution. Remember, honorable members, that the Multi-Party Women's Caucus undertook to look into the issues of decriminalization of sex work after a resolution made during the 2015 Women's Roundtable discussion. I know we have to explain things this way, and I know some people are very sensitive to the way we see prostitution. The Multi-Party Women's Caucus had promised the women who were part of those roundtable discussions that there will be follow-ups on the resolution today. So we did that. Indeed, we have been following up on this issue as we had briefings by the Law Reform and the Minister, the Deputy Minister of Justice. On our last engagement with the Ministry of Justice, they promised to regularly update us. Today, they are here for that update. The Law Reform Committee will take us through its recommendations on the issue of adult prostitution. The Deputy Minister of Justice, but he's here already. I thought he would be coming in late. He said, I am late. The second part of our engagement is with the IEC. As we all know, the national provincial elections are around the corner. So as women, we need to ensure that there are provisions in place to ensure 50-50 representation during elections. We do not want a situation where the fate of women is left in the whims and mercy of political parties. So IEC is here to answer our question. Are they here?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you very much. I suppose we all have the agenda in front of us. I welcome. Okay. This meeting then is open, and I welcome everybody. I think people who are here invited to come here. There are chairs that are vacant. We are going to allow the Deputy Minister to come in here.
Thanks very much, Chair. Chair, I think last time I had spoken about the fact that Cabinet approval had not been obtained yet for the release of the Law Reform Commission report. When we first took it to Cabinet, the view was that it would be preferable for government to have a position that it puts out as a preferred option. Ultimately, because of so many different views, that wasn't possible to get a preferred option, and Cabinet then agreed that the report could be released without that that proposal, but released for public comment. So it was released on Friday by the minister in Pretoria, and I think it's been available online since then. Ms. Clark from the Law Reform Commission, because it's effectively a Law Reform Commission document, can go then through the issues, in particular why they opted to use the word prostitution as opposed to sex worker. What needs to happen now is really a extensive public debate on the issue. The Department of Justice will be involved in some programs on that. But I think it would also be useful for the Multi-Party Women's Caucus to also look at facilitating discussion and engagement on the issue. There are some voices that are there are very strong feelings on many sides on the issue. But I think we do have a responsibility to ensure that all sectors of society are covered in that debate, so that it's not a situation of when one comes to passing legislation that only represents the views of a smaller group of people. But Chair, that's sort of basically it. So the report is out. It's out for public debate, public consumption. I would though urge that it's unfortunately a very long report. The summary, but I think it's more important to read the full report. I think that's largely what I can say at this point. There have been some points raised about why has it taken so long. The Commission initially finished their draft in 2014, or gave it to the Minister at the end of 2014. The Ministry had then requested that they relook at the area of partial decriminalisation, and that was then presented in June 2015. We did take it to Cabinet last year, but that was when it was raised that we should look at a preferred option. It then went to Cabinet, I can't remember the exact date, but fairly recently, and we've then released it after that Cabinet approval having been obtained. So Chair, I think that's largely all I could say. I would want to then suggest that Ms. Clark run through the report, because previously when she's been through it, she wasn't able to give you the actual report. I'm not sure how much time you've got, but then I think it is for yourselves, I would suggest, also to look at how will you facilitate public engagement from your side on this.
Thank you. Here we are. That is the brief from the Deputy Minister. Does anyone need a translation of something? Okay. So we are going to allow this class to give us the report. And we hope they are going to give us the report. We won't have to force you to open the report at that time, because people were talking as if it's a closed report. Can we have the report then?
Good afternoon, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members. Thank you for the opportunity of being here. I've been asked just to present the methodology, the key findings, and information on the draft bill. I'll take you through the presentation then. Without further ado, to place the report in context, the South African Law Reform Commission were requested to provide a comprehensive overhaul of existing statutory and common law sexual offences, which means the codification of offences to be brought into one statute. Because it was such a large investigation, we decided to separate it into four parts. The first two parts gave rise to the Criminal Law Sexual Offences Amendment Act of 2007. The third part of this larger investigation is the adult prostitution part, and the fourth part is pornography and children. With regards to the overarching investigation, we've published three issue papers, three discussion papers, and two reports, and we've had public workshops at each one of the junctures of the issue paper and the discussion paper phase. We not only looked at the legislative framework, but also non-legislative recommendations, because we were asked to look at processes in the criminal justice system to ensure implementation as well. With regards to the adult prostitution investigation, we were requested to review the fragmented legislative framework. Currently, the laws regulating prostitution are found in the Sexual Offences Act of 1957 and the Sexual Offences Amendment Act of 2007. We were also asked to consider the need for law reform and to identify the need for a legislative response to regulate, prevent, deter, or reduce prostitution. With regards to the consultation process, we conducted 8 formal workshops in urban and rural venues. We had numerous focus group meetings with stakeholders, including facilitated workshops with adults who had engaged in or who were currently engaging in the sale of sexual services, and we did this in various areas. The list of respondents is contained in an extra B of the report, and you will see that we received a combined 1,761 submissions from individuals and organizations. And this was endorsed by a further 889 individuals or organizations, bringing the total to 2,650 submissions. As our Honorable Deputy Minister has already said, we submitted the report to the Ministry in August 2014. We had further discussions, and the augmented report was submitted in June 2015. We have, however, endeavored to keep current with the latest trends. With regards to the context, who are we talking about? We're talking about adult men, women, and transgender persons, citizens and non-citizens over the age of 18, and all ages in respect of buyers and third parties, brothel owners, pimps, and their families. What are we talking about? We're talking about the core activity, which is sexual acts in exchange for reward, and peripheral offences, which include soliciting and brothel-related offences. Why are we looking at it? We're looking at it because we were asked, in terms of the legal framework, to look at codifying the law into one law to have all sexual offences in one act. From a societal perspective, we were requested to look at problems that had been identified and lobbied on for legal change. Essentially, in terms of our research, it has been in terms of our submissions and also desktop research and comparative research, we have found that the drivers of the sale of sexual services in South Africa is sexual violence, family breakdown, severely limiting socioeconomic circumstances, which are exacerbated by various factors including drug and substance abuse, gender-based violence, migration, targeted exploitation. We have the new phenomenon of pseudo-boyfriends that seem to have taken place here in South Africa, but it's also prevalent in Europe, and then also the link with organized crime. Essentially, the key drivers seem to be poverty, inequality, and unemployment. This just brings me to the terminology, which I understand is very contentious, and using the term sex work and using the term prostitution. Firstly, the word sex work has been popularized through the decriminalization lobby group and media narratives, but not all who provide sexual services for reward identify as sex workers. It also anticipates a particular position in policy and law, i.e. using the word anticipates decriminalization. And work also creates the expectation of automatic labor rights, which I'll get to later. Furthermore, one also has to bear in mind that children from the age of 15 may enter the labor market, and that brings the contentious area of when one may engage in work. So the Law Reform Commission had decided at the point of starting the larger investigation to retain the word prostitution. Also indeed because it reflects the words used in international conventions such as the Paloma Protocol. With regards to recommendations, the word statutory unlawful carnal intercourse is used in the 1957 legislation. The Law Reform Commission is recommending to rather use the word sexual act. We believe that it's more accurate to refer to this exchange of any financial or other reward, favor, or compensation for the purpose of engaging in a sexual act as being the definition of prostitution. The definition of sexual act is the same as that in the Sexual Offences Amendment Act of 2007, and the sexual act includes both non-penetrative and penetrative acts. We do not use the word commercial sex. The reason for this is that commercial sex is a broader term which includes the pornography industry and sex-based entertainment, such as live sex shows, and prostitution is only a subcategory of this. With regards to our current law and policy, the selling, buying, and prostitution-related acts are criminal in terms of Sexual Offences Act of 1957 and the Sexual Offences Amendment Act of 2007. In 2002, the Constitutional Court found in the S versus Jordan case, which challenged the 1957 Sexual Offences Act, that this act does not unfairly discriminate against women, it does not infringe upon the right to privacy, freedom and security, and the right to economic activity. The court also found that the legislature has a responsibility to combat social ills where appropriate and to use criminal sanctions where appropriate. The court also found that there was a range of legal responses possible to address prostitution in open and democratic societies. For this reason, the report evaluates four main responses. Internationally, there are four main responses, and that is total criminalization, partial criminalization, non-criminalization or decriminalization, and regulation. Essentially, to retain the current situation that we have or to change the existing law is a policy choice. This brings us to the considerations for law reform. Currently, we have found that there is no national strategy to assist people out of prostitution, and there is no specific Department of Social Development or other government program to assist people who are resorting to the sale of sexual services for economic means. Child and adult prostitution is dealt with separately in law, but due to the social and structural drivers are interwoven. So one can't just separate child and adult prostitution. An important consideration from a law reform perspective is whether the current legislative scheme exacerbates the social problems associated with prostitution or serves the purpose of countering them. In terms of law reform, we've had to look at the law and then the implementation of the law. Within the South African context, we found that prostitution is found in unique societal challenges and geographical specificity. We have porous borders, we have high levels of unemployment, poverty, migrant and illegal foreign job seekers, high levels of violence, particularly sexual violence against women. We have the HIV/AIDS pandemic, drug substance abuse, trafficking, exploitation of unethical authorities and others. We've had to be mindful of lessons learned elsewhere and also what we found to be a reverse trend of the pendulum. Internationally, in previously liberalized settings, that meaning regulated and decriminalized settings, we're finding that the harm and exploitation of prostitution is increasingly being recognized. And there are clawback measures to move away from legalizing and decriminalizing, moving towards criminalizing of acts relating to prostitution in the Netherlands, Germany, and Sweden. These were our findings prior to 2014. From 2014 to 2017, which isn't included in the report, as such, you'll find that there are developments in terms of France, Ireland, and Canada moving towards partial criminalization. You've had a clawback from a more liberalized setting. We found that prostitution is totally criminalized across Africa, except for Senegal, but currently there's also a move to clawback in Senegal. In the USA, it's also totally criminalized, except for a few boroughs in Nevada, and not only the whole of Nevada. It's also criminalized in India, and in New Zealand, you have what was brought forward as a decriminalization model. But in fact, it's more regulatory model because it doesn't allow for prostitution under the age of 18. It does not allow for prostitution of migrants, and also doesn't allow for advertising. This brings us to points of agreement in the report by all the lobby groups and people that gave us submissions. everyone that gave us submissions agreed that the sale of sexual services for reward is a result of a choice made in severely limiting socioeconomic circumstances and in a context of social inequality. There were many reports of family breakdown, sexual abuse, rape, and poverty. People who sell sexual services for reward are vulnerable and experience harm, and this also seems to transcend ideological divides. The opinions on the legislative framework are polarized, though, with strong lobbying for decriminalization versus retention of partial criminalization or criminalization. And this wasn't based on a morality basis of good and bad, but very much different on solutions to exploitation and reduction of harm. With regards to an overview and summary of the report has four chapters. And the first chapter is an overview, the second deals with the person selling sexual services, the third chapter deals with the person buying sexual services, and the fourth part deals with brothels and third parties and pimps, people on the periphery, and people living off the earnings of our prostitution. It contains legislative and non-legislative recommendations, non-legislative looking at implementation and process, and it has two draft amendment bills as options. Essentially, what we found is the debate centers around three topics. Firstly, whether prostitution or the sale of sex should be seen as work or exploitation. Secondly, it deals with issues of access to healthcare and the issue of HIV and AIDS. And thirdly, it deals with issues of arbitrary arrest and exploitation. These are the three main arguments that are put forward for changing the law. This brings me to the two legislative recommendations. And the Commission has found that after evaluating the evidence and comparative experience, there is not sufficient reason to change the law. Constitutionally, there's a strong public interest in the regulation of prostitution through the law. We need a coherent legal framework and effective tools to tackle prostitution and the exploitation of people in prostitution, to deal with pimps and with links to drug markets, trafficking, and other organized crime. We are recommending two legislative options. The one is to repeal the Sexual Offences Act of 1957 and amend the Sexual Offences Act 2007 to criminalise all prostitution-related offences with the exception of the person selling sexual services, and that is partial criminalisation. The second option is to repeal the Sexual Offences Act of 1957 and amend the Sexual Offences Act of 2007 to criminalise prostitution and all prostitution-related offences. This option is coupled to a diversion option to facilitate exit. This is the preferred option of the Commission. We've had to be cognizant of strong recommendations that have come out from the Commission for Gender Equality, which has informed this second option. The repeal of the Sexual Offences Act of 1957 would be for either one of the options, and then the, I don't know whether you'd like me to go through the actual crimes to be included, not. With regards to the non-legislative recommendations, we found that the law is often a blunt yet necessary instrument and not always best suited on its own to address social problems. Implementation is needed. A clear strategy is needed for dealing with prostitution on a primary preventative level and on a secondary intervention level. We are proposing a national strategy to leave prostitution, a skills development program to enable gradual exit, which is something that aligns itself with the MTSF and the National Planning Commission and CEDAW, with the aim of protecting people against gender-based violence. We've also made the recommendation that transactional relationships, amavusu, blesses, which is not strictly prostitution, should, as a growing social phenomenon, be further investigated from a social and a gender-based violence intervention perspective. We endorse the recommendations in the Women's Legal Centre and SWEST report, Every Sex Worker a Human Rights Defender, where they find that the Commission for Gender Equality and the HRC should investigate human rights violations, that SAPS and IPED should investigate reports of violence and unlawful conduct by officers, that SAPS should establish guidelines for police conduct when dealing with prostitution and issue instructions. We have ascertained that there are no national instructions in the police to deal with prostitution currently. With regards to administrative mechanisms, we also support the suggestion by the WLC and SWET that there should be a monitoring and responding to reports of police violence and unlawful conduct. A monitoring mechanism should be developed to help minimize such occurrences and to enable effective responses and to ensure that complainants are protected from further victimization. We also recommend that to address and correct discriminatory behavior of healthcare workers should be by means of internal complaints mechanisms or equality legislation and not by means of criminal intervention. We recommend the implementation of the SANEC NSP objectives, which will improve the use, access and uptake of health services. We recommend that guidelines for health workers be drawn up on interacting with vulnerable groups. With regards to substance abuse in the context of prostitution, we recommend that this deserves further attention and intervention. We recommend specialization by SAPS and development of good practice. And we also recommend the Department of Social Development should be mandated to engage with prostitutes on issues of social security and poverty alleviation, including reskilling and alternative income generating projects. This brings us to Chapter 1, which is an overview chapter. This deals with the legislative and regulatory overview. It discusses the different models of criminalization, partial criminalization, regulation, and non-criminalization. It looks at relevant developments, i.e. the NSP, COSATA Gender Conference, the Gender Discussion Document, FIDUSA Policy and Resolution of Prostitution, the National Sex Worker Symposium, the CGE Position Paper on Sex Work, and the HSRC SA National HIV Prevalence Incidence and Behavior Survey. Each chapter includes relevant research, salient submissions to questions in the discussion paper, discussion and evaluation and recommendations. With regard to Chapter 2, this deals with the seller of sexual services. We recommend the retention of criminalized setting with diversion, with a legal mechanism to remove women from coercive circumstances, and to be provided with an opportunity for training, counseling, and reintegration of families. We recommend a national strategy on prostitution with regional, district, intersectoral task teams with various professions to provide exit programs and strategies. Following diversion, we recommend the expunging of any criminal record. We also recommend, as another option, the partial criminalization, where all is criminalized with the exception of the person providing the sexual services, which is known as the Nordic model. Other recommendations are that if we were to move towards a decriminalized setting, sex tourism will affect the branding and brand value of South Africa, and there would be unintended and serious long-term economic consequences. We had a submission from the Minister of Tourism in this regard. We also recommend mandating of the DSD to engage on issues of social security and poverty alleviation, including reskilling and alternative income-generating projects. We recommend that the vulnerability, which is exacerbated by substance abuse, needs attention and intervention. We recommend the reform of the law. We find that the reform of the law has not been found to erase stigma. It makes women more vulnerable as they must sacrifice anonymity to be recognized as legal prostitutes. And the HIV Stigma Index has found that the stigma is more internalized. In Germany, they have found a very slow uptake of any registration of people selling sexual services because they do not want to sacrifice their anonymity. We then have made specific recommendations with regards to Section 268 of the Criminal Procedure Act with regards to competent verdicts, and also recommend that there's no amendment necessary for Section 277 of the Criminal Procedure Act in terms of dealing with character and previous sexual experience, as this section is non-specific. With regards to people who pay for sexual services, the buyers, the research has shown that buyers of sexual services in South Africa are very violent. This is research by the Medical Research Council. And although there are existing offences to deal with buyers, this is very difficult because of the nature of the engagement in the buying and selling of sexual services. Section 7 of the Trafficking in Persons Act makes that the use of the services of a victim of trafficking and knowing or ought reasonably to have known that the person is a victim of trafficking makes the person guilty of an offence, and this will include prostitution, so that this section is sufficient with this regard. Further, if the buyer finds out and reports that a person has been trafficked, for example, he could be found guilty of a related offence, so he could face prostitution. So what we're recommending in this regard is if he reports the offence, that he could be granted a discharge from prosecution depending on the circumstances, and that the magistrate should be given a discretion in this regard. We have also found that legalizing will not address the power imbalance or reduce the demand for unsafe or high-risk sex. It may normalize coercion and expendability of women, and it may further increase demand locally and internationally. The decriminalization lobby have acknowledged that there may be an increase in prostitution, and I believe to combat this, they are maybe planning towards unionizing. With regards to criminalizing demand, we found that criminalizing demand in itself will not end prostitution, but it is aimed at as a significant reduction, and it would target the demand which drives the selling of sexual services and the provision of unsafe sex. And this aligns with General Recommendation 24 in CEDAW. This brings us to Chapter 4, dealing with third parties. The Commission has found that the fundamental rights to freedom and security are no better for a prostitute working in a brothel compared to a person who works alone. There's routine abuse and violence, and this forms part of the prostitution experience, and we found this from comparative legislation as well. The experience in New Zealand has also found that the legislation and people dealing in the sale of prostitution have found that the legislation cannot protect them from violence in this scenario. Brothels do not ensure the quality of life of people in prostitution, and we found that it's problematic to institutionalize businesses that specialize in facilitating the sale of sex as a legitimate business. We found that restricting the commercial exploitation of prostitutes by prohibiting brothels and third-party management is a justifiable limitation on the individual rights of third parties to freedom of trade, occupation, and profession. We have also found that from the submissions that PIMPs are problematic, and from first-hand experience, there seems to be an established corridor from Mozambique through Johannesburg to Kimberley and Bloemfontein, and in turn to Port Elizabeth and Durban. We're recommending to retain the offence of knowingly living off the earnings of prostitution and to extend it to include the offence of benefiting from prostitution of another person. We are, however, also recommending the same defences as in the Sexual Offences Act of 2007. This means that if children are found to be living off the earnings of the prostitution of their mothers or fathers, that they would then not fall foul of the law. There would be an exclusion for these children, but not for adults who are using siblings or using their girlfriends to prostitute on their behalf to live off of their earnings. With regards to the eradication of street solicitation, we find that it is a pressing and substantial concern and a valid legislative aim. This has been the finding also in the Supreme Court of Appeal in Canada, and we find that it's a legislative aim to protect the rights of the communities too, and that soliciting street prostitution and should then not be allowed either in either one of the options. We also recommend, as is done in New Zealand and a number of other areas, that there should be a ban on advertising and that the premises and advertising should be banned. We recommend that the retention of the criminal sanctions for brothels and all third-party offences. Sorry, my apologies. I thought you were indicating for me to stop. I'm sorry. I know I'm a bit like a runaway train. I do apologise. Just unpack that very quickly in terms of the three topics. I don't know whether I still have a bit of time. With regards to whether prostitution is work or exploitation, we've looked at the International Labour Office. Sorry, ma'am, thank you. And we found in terms of the International Labour Office Decent Work Addenda and the Decent Work Programme, of South Africa, that it promotes opportunities for people to obtain decent and productive work. We found that the Labour Relations Act does not cover independent contractors, which are the majority of people selling sexual services, and therefore they would not obtain automatic labour rights. We find that internationally there's a legal and an illegal sector that pops up when you have this scenario. We found that, that essentially we're recommending that prostitution should not be seen as work or a viable option for women in South Africa as decent work, that it does not lift women out of a lifetime of poverty and economic inequality. In Germany, it has been found to be not a reasonable means for securing one's living, and in Netherlands, it has been found to be not work like any other. In recent analysis in the Netherlands, there's been found that there's a relative failure to improve the conditions of the women selling sexual services, and a new discussion on discouraging demand is necessary in New Zealand. With regards to access to healthcare and HIV and the impact of HIV, the National Sex Worker HIV Plan was rolled out on the 11th of March. There's provision of PrEP and the distribution of condoms. We found that there's exacerbating factors of alcohol and substance abuse, and also the decriminalisation will not allow necessarily for the use of condoms. We do not have an equal playing field in terms of gender equity, and you will then find that if persons are willing to pay more, people are willing not to use condoms. Unfortunately, on the trucking routes down in KZN, people are already resorting to using anal penetration to prevent pregnancy because they do not want to use condoms. We do believe there are in any event, there have been a number of initiatives in terms of access to healthcare and an impact on HIV, which is already rolling out in terms of the NSP. With regard to arbitrary arrest and exploitation, we believe that it's already illegal. We need national instructions, training, and guidelines for the police, endorsing the recommendations of the Women's Legal Centre for specific monitoring, and we also believe that the police should not be confiscating condoms, and this should be very clear in terms of their guidelines. We have found that changing the legislative framework could create an extremely dangerous cultural shift juxtaposed against the high rate of sexual crimes already committed against women, rendering them even more expendable than at the present. Comparatively, violence continues unabated in non-criminalized settings. It does not neatly excise prostitution from other illegal activities. It continues to be shaped by the same socioeconomic factors that concentrate crime in areas plagued by poverty, inequality, and unemployment. Sorry, there are a number of further concerns relating to tourism. I will just go past this, and I've spoken to the links of child prostitution, for example. A possible increase in legal and illegal migration, undesirable dual system of legal and illegal settings, which has happened elsewhere.
1 minute.
And then one of the main findings is that there's an intrinsic human rights violation linked to prostitution in itself and not because of the legal framework. We found that decriminalising, for example, male-to-male sexual interaction did not change the vulnerability in terms of the key population and problems with HIV. So changing the framework is not going to necessarily change that for this key population either. We find that legalizing will not address the power imbalance or reduce the demand for unsafe or high-risk sex, and it will normalize coercion and expendability of women. In conclusion, the aim of the legislative intervention is to protect the rights of poor and vulnerable persons, particularly women and girls, predominantly affected by inequality, poverty, and unemployment and exploitation. And South Africa needs to ensure that it has a coherent legal framework to deal with prostitution and prostitution-related crime, which includes money laundering, drugs, and trafficking. Thank you very much.
Honourable members. Where is your report? I'm not going to allow IEC to come in because I want people to deal with this disaster.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Thank you very much, Deputy Minister from Justice, and thank you from the Commission. The presentation is quite empirical. You could see the empirical evidence, and you could see that much of the research was done to substantiate whatever argument that you've got. There is something that I did not understand, though. You are saying there is no separation between the child and adult. That's what the Commission identified, that there is no separation. Now, if that's what the Commission has identified, I am going to say, then was the Child's Act used in relation to the decision or to the recommendation taken by the Commission? That is the first one. And the second one is that, however, though, as we're coming down, my answer, I got partially answered on the social ills, because for me, the law reforms, like you have said and repeatedly said so, they are not going to address the social ills, because the act of prostitution is an outcome of those social ills, which means that in your recommendations, I suggest that it has to come so clearly and so emphatic that government needs to address those social ills before the law reforms. Because if we do not address the three enemies which have led those kids to be where they are and to be in those conditions, those are our children. They find themselves in a situation which they can't change. There are no jobs, there is nothing, and they think the way to end the living is that. Whereas there is a real enemy, which is an inequality, like I said, towards the end, you actually address those things. So for me, really, I am saying, I suggest that the Deputy Minister, if you do your recommendation, I've also gone through your changes of the amendments, which I did not have a problem, except one problem, that no separation between the child and the adult. I need to clarify on that. Thank you.
Yes, is there any other hand?
Yes.
Honorable
two. Chairperson. Kelebuche le commission in preparing this report. But I want to disagree in most of the things that they have said. One, we cannot be equated with Germany, you name them, Norway, and all that. Firstly, they were never oppressed. They were never pushed into reserves. You know, they didn't have unemployment as high as we have. At this point in time, we're sitting at 23%. So they didn't have all those conditions that we have. Firstly, if we, and I would like you as the Commission, not only to change this law, but also when you present other laws, those circumstances should prevail in the law. They are not there. Magistrates do as they wish with the people that sit on those benches that they judge and sentence, because of the laws that we agree that those laws must continue. But what I want you to do is to unpack that women are not equal to men. As you say, you agree that men are violent. You must remember we are from an apartheid violent society. So it's not strange that they are violent. They can't be like men in Europe, those that buy sex. So there is a need that you must persecute them right away. So you can't defend them and say they can't be persecuted because they are violent, or they will be persecuted at some stage when they are reported. The second argument It's the issue of HIV. You say that people are no longer using condoms, but we're still saying people must use condoms. If they can't use it, if they're not using condoms, it should not be government that is saying that they should not use condoms. They must continue using condoms even if they engage in sex. Being they sell the sex or they buy the sex, they must use condoms. So we can't say because in Natal now, people are using the other method of sex to prevent a pregnancy. Therefore, we must not decriminalize. We must decriminalize and persecute the buyers. The other issue that I wanted to outline here, which I differ with you, I really don't understand why we have to discuss this thing even further like now. The issues of Mavuso and blessers are caused by our social ills. These social ills, we can't keep on promoting them. If we write them in black and white, it means that you are not saying in the law that we must go and conscientize people. You're not saying that social development must go and conscientize people to go out of that. You're not saying that social human settlement must create new settlement for our people. You're not saying that. And you're not saying that we must change the special setup, the special setting of South Africa. You're not saying that. And you're not saying that we must create jobs, exit programs. What are those exit programs? In Uganda, why didn't you give us a clear example of Uganda, where they have clear programs for prostitution? You give us Germany and, New Zealand and Germany and all that. We can learn. Those are far advanced. They are the first world countries. Give us examples in our in Africa where our own people almost have the same circumstances, but they were never oppressed like us, where there were structural issues that were clear that Africans must stay here and they should not move. Even today we are able to move there. Let us be in a democratic society. I think, Deputy Minister, let us change our laws. You know, I think I agree with the argument chairperson of your standing committee chairperson when he says that justice must be an African justice. We must stop being European in everything that we do. It is about time that we must go and ask our people, how do you want to be legislated? Not that the commission must always give us Western cultures. We, you know, it's medical aid. Our kids, as 18 years, they cannot get medical aid. Our kids grow as old as 45 because they can't get a job in the first place. You sit with a child until they are 45 years in the house. And at that point in time, they are sick. They can't get into a medical aid. But that is not in our laws. So it is about time that when you write laws, put our situations in place. Even at university level, the content of sociology must stop being the content of Europe. It can't continue that way. That is why we're not solving our problems. Our social problems are created by us because we still copy what Western cultures still do. So change this law so that it suits the people who work there, so that they can go out. When you put the law, they would have decided, I work here and this is the situation. When it does not work for them, we will change it. At this point in time, they feel that they want to decriminalize prostitution. Let's criminalize it. Because even in the Bible, there were prostitutes. And Jesus said, when he changed the prostitutes, he didn't judge the prostitute. He said, I have come to make you not to pray here anymore so that you can pray for yourself. Then they will change themselves. So if they feel that they want to continue, to decriminalize, it's going to help them.
Can you
them
share
that.
The time, please?
Thank you, ma'am.
Yeah. I think Honorable Chan.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just to welcome the presentation. Okay. And to say that, you know, this matter has actually been under discussion for quite a long time now. We need to start making progress. And I wish maybe when we had meetings like this, we should have actually also have invited the Commission on Gender Equality, because extensively they did work on this. And a few years ago, already they had made a pronouncement as to what direction this whole thing must actually take. And the direction that they actually provided after they had done extensive research and engaged SWET was that they are supporting decriminalization so that the industry is actually regulated. One other thing that I actually realized is that also in terms of labeling, you see, when we work with disabled people, we listen to them as to what they want us to call them. Even this with sex workers, they want to be called sex workers, not prostitutes. So we live in a democracy, so we need to actually observe these things. So the language of the document itself, I think it needs to actually change. But the language, in a way, tells of the outcome, which is something that actually tramples on the democratic system that we have. One thing that is very obvious is that this industry is as old as mankind. You can't wish it away. The fact of the matter is when organizations like SWET first came forward and they said, please help us, it was because of the abuses that are actually taking place in this industry. If you look at how many of them get killed, if you look at how many of them actually get raped by the policemen when they try to go and report the cases, so which means themselves as human beings have their rights violated just because of the industry that they find themselves in. But if we are in a democratic dispensation, we need to protect every right, no matter whose right it is. And don't look at it from the moral perspective. Look at it from the human rights perspective. And in that way, it's actually going to help us to manage to move forward with these discussions, because we can't keep on coming, talking about the same thing over and over and over again. We need to make progress. But what is important is to really try by all means to conclude. You mentioned the kind of ills, which I would actually agree with you. HIV is a challenge. Some of them, you say it's exacerbated substance abuse. I'm not sure because I haven't actually done such research to know that sex workers mostly abuse substances. Of course, trafficking is a problem. You say it promotes child prostitution, maybe to some extent. You're saying it has negative impact on tourism. I don't know, because some of the men actually travel just because in the country, in a particular country, sex work is legal. I mean, I've been to places like Thailand where we were told that, you know, Australian women complain when a man says, I'm going to Thailand over the weekend, you know that they are going for sex work. Can you see, to engage with the sex workers? So basically what's important then is to look at how we find the middle ground. And themselves also, if they have organizations, they must run awareness programs that will actually help us to deal with things like trafficking, that will help us to deal with child prostitution, because I'm sure themselves agree that we are not going to allow child prostitution. We will not continue to support human trafficking. And we take it that organizations like SWET should actually run awareness programs, because these are the things that actually put a cloud on this industry that you are actually trying to promote. But at the end of the day, what is important is to actually continue to advocate, which must be legislated, regulation of the industry. And this regulation will actually also help those that are concerned. Because, you know, people are worried, if you actually legalize it, do you mean somebody must come and sell in front of my gate? We say the bylaws should actually take care of that. Local government will have bylaws that says, this is the districts that you can actually use. This is what you're supposed to do. This is what you're not supposed to do. That's regulation. And regulation is what we are actually promoting in order for us not to be oppressive when it comes to this industry. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Can the following speakers really shorten there? Unfortunately, I have to do this to you. This Wednesday, we are starting at 3 o'clock. So we have got a few minutes left, and we must hear from the IEC. Debbie, and then Madeke.
Yeah, thank you very much for the report. South African Law Reform Commission. Yeah, I'm of the view that really this thing has been on the public domain. It's been a long time that we've been discussing about this, and women are being demonized. They are demonized because they are selling the bodies and that. But if it's coming to men, no, it's fine. And I believe that there should be really an overhauling. Really, it needs an overhauling of this law. Because they are there, sex workers. So when I look at, you know, the research that you have done, I think it's not enough. We should really still go to people, because they're there, and we should really protect them. We must protect them, you know, as Parliament. I believe that the decriminalization, it should be the way to go with sex workers. So let's protect them. They are there, but more engagement. We should still have to engage with more people in society. I thank you.
Maybe we should call it so easy if we want to make a new vocab.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the report, thank you, Deputy Minister. More or less covered by Honorable Majake with some of the issues that he brought forward. But I wanted to comment about their consultation process that when I look at it, it's too scanty. I don't think it really covers all the sectors of the population of South Africa. With 8 workshops and only 1,761 submissions, maybe time frame, but I should think there should be more consultation that is done, because people out there will say they have not been consulted in, so that they are able to put their views regarding this, because definitely what we are discussing is a very sensitive issue, and it is not very pleasant to most mothers and fathers whereby their children have to go and sell sex simply because of the unemployment and the poverty situation that is surrounding our country. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to say it's important that when you come to Parliament, they must come and listen to us. Last time, Chairperson, we were at E249. The same things have been said in E249, and the report comes the same way. Last time we even asked a question to. We asked them a question, what is your constituency? And I talk about 150,000 people. And the same number, Chairperson, was this, the very same report that we are dealing with today was the same report that we dealt with in E249. So I was just saying to Deputy Minister, please, whoever is dealing with this project, they should take what members are saying very seriously, because others are saying it with passion. You can see that they know they're affected. Others, they don't even understand. I cannot comment on, the content of what you have said, but I'm just saying that let's go and do a proper research. And let's feel the South African way. The New Zealand thing was talked about. We all criticized it and said, don't bring other countries, especially countries that are not like South Africa, that are not, I mean, we are not as developed as New Zealand. We said don't bring those examples. We want examples that can talk to the situation here in South Africa. So I'm just saying that let's go do our work, but maybe we need to come up with time frames to say within this particular period you need to come back with what members have asked and actually try to address them. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. Okay. I would like to give the opportunity to the IEC. No.
Chair, I think there are some issues that need to be responded to.
No, no, I know.
Yeah.
If only people, when the bell rings, they mustn't stand up.
Okay. But
I'm willing to come in late, must stand up.
But look, I mean, just firstly, can
no,
I...
No, I'm going to give the example.
Thank you, Chairperson. Sorry for being late. To go to the doctor. Maybe if I can say that thank you very much for the presentation, although I didn't hear it all. I'm saying that maybe if we can hear from the Deputy Minister of why does this thing take so long to be finalized, because we have seen that these things have been talk almost every time when we meet with the organizations, the people are talking one and the same thing. But us as legislators, it seems as if we are the ones who are prolonging this process. We are not have yet finished to finalize the issue of decriminalization of sex work. And the other thing is that, but my worry is that the only people who are complaining and our African people, rather than the other races, because other races, to them is fine, but when it comes to our people who are African, it seems as if we are letting them down, because we know that those people are doing the sex work, but to them it seems different from what the white people are doing. So why are we taking so long to do that? And we also need to, because I know that as Parliament we have been able to introduce laws such as the choice of the termination of pregnancy, and also the gays and lesbian marriages. But why do these laws take so long? Maybe you can hear from the Minister. Thank you very much.
Look, just to clarify, particularly for people who came late, this is the Law Reform Commission's report. The delays were getting cabinet approval, so I don't think it would be fair to expect there to be changes from the Law Reform Commission after they had engaged with the committee, a few months ago. That report had been handed over to government. It's now in the public domain. That was what Cabinet's decision was. So it's up to yourselves and the public to decide how to engage in the debate. It is a debate. I mean, one thing I'm a little bit confused about is, you know, there's reference to, and the Commission can speak about what they used, but not using Germany or New Zealand. But Germany and New Zealand, it's decriminalized.
Yeah.
In the rest of Africa, with the exception of Senegal, it's criminalized. So it's but anyway, I think that It's now really in your hands as to what you want to do with it.
Some people wanted to speak. I don't know who were you referring to, Debbie?
Oh, no,
but I just want to say one thing.
Just
wait. You know, I am personally very disappointed. I even said so in my statement. Because nothing has been done so far.
Mm.
And we are talking about reality here. And for the fact that we are quoting laws, 1957, and we must really bow to the fact that people say they don't like the word prostitution, and then they must use it because it was there then. Now, how many years after that? And this is democracy. We can't be ruled by laws as the negative prefect done. I'm really disappointed. We are absolutely doing nothing. And I'm not threatening anyone, but you know, from our wisdom and our experience, these things start this way and they explode. And when they've exploded, people think that this is can't be governed because people keep on asking for this, keep on asking, and they've got confidence in us as government. They've got confidence in us, in the institutions that we have, and nothing is being done. Really, this is very much unacceptable. Who is the people, who are the people who wanted to speak at the bank? You are pointing at people there. No one. No, there are people that are not allowed to speak. They only came here to do the hearing. They are not going to. We will give people a chance when we have a public hearing. Yes. We are going to give the IEC this opportunity. And why? I want to ask the members, what is it that we are saying now that we are wrapping up this part? Can I get a hand?
Can I recommend that we will engage it as the deputy minister says?
Yes.
Because he is saying there's nothing that I can do, it's in the public domain. Then we will engage it and change that, those issues that we say must change in that act once and for all. Thank you, deputy
minister. Is that it?
Yes.
Okay. Can I give now an opportunity to the IEC?
Chair, can I be excused?
Bando, whose head is that? At the back?
No.
Yeah, no.
I think we sent a communique to all the organizations that if you are going to be allowed to come here, you are not going to be participating. And all the people who are here, they do know that. There is a time where people will be invited and they must come and give us their thinking of the whole thing. And now we are going to allow, do you want to say something, Jim?
I just wanted to ask if I can be excused, please.
How dare you? Now we are going to ask the IEC to come nearer. By the way, I should indicate to you that Uchiki knows that we are here for another 30 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, you got a presentation?
Sure.
Okay. Are we ready now?
Members, but we just need to get the presentation on.
Come again?
We are ready now.
You are ready?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Can we have IEC then?
Yes. Thank you very much. Just to introduce the delegation, I'm Simon Mavolo. I'm the acting chief electoral officer at the IEC. With me is Ms. Raikarat. She's the senior manager for legal services. And Mr. Mlungi Sikelembe is head of commission services. Just to give the presentation outline, we'll do the an introduction and the possible amendments that we are looking at currently and what we propose as possible intervention that the multi-party caucus can do to achieve the intention that has been articulated to us, i.e. ensuring that when nominations come, they come with a proper prescription for quota. What I'm going to present is the possible areas that we are considering for amendment. And this is a result of the interactions we've had with political parties. After the elections last year, we had a national debriefing with all political parties, and jointly we identified these areas for possible amendment. But we've also had consultation within the IEC itself and identified more areas for possible amendment. So what we will be presenting really is a cross-statute legislative amendment. In other words, we don't intend to amend just the one legislation, but we are amending three pieces of legislation. The first area, Chairperson and members, that we wish to amend is to Section 8(3) of the Electoral Act to ensure that a person may be registered in any voting district in the ward in which they live, rather than in a VD in which they live. Now the legal requirement is going to be in the ward rather than the voting district.
Can you just have one presentation paper again? People are just distributing things, the chair. Can you just have an order?
Where's the
guy? I don't know. And
what is
and
this matter?
People are just distributing things, but they're having some chaos. You can't hear.
Ooh.
We don't know.
Would you like to say something there by the door? Oh. Ningas Paza Mitsige Klaba Niamba Namba.
Use the mic near you. Oh, okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Continue.
Thank you, Chairperson. Then the second area that we are looking at is when a person changes their registration, the Chief Electoral Officer must ensure that they are registered in the correct ward. So we are moving from a legal requirement to register in a VD, but in a correct ward. And the reason for that is because, given the cases that we've had, there are people who have voting stations which are close to them, but they're not in the voting district in which they live. So if you make the geographic area, which is the legal requirement, it is better, one. But also because the ward is a political entity. It's a political entity of representation, whereas the voting district is just an administrative entity. So that's why we want to move from voting district to ward. And then the third area is to amend Schedule 3 of the Electoral Act, which is essentially the election timetable, to make it possible for objections to the voter's roll to be made before the voter's roll is certified. The reason for that, members, is that we have a voter's roll, it's certified, it's given to all political parties. Yet, on the eve of an election, some party comes and say, Mamabolo, Kelembe, and so on, don't live in this ward. They should be in another ward. But they've had the voter's roll for a while. So if we are not careful, if we don't regulate this properly, we can have a government, and someone can, after the government has been constituted and members sworn in and so on, can go to court and say, I challenge the outcome of that election because I have now identified that Mamabolo, Kelembe, and so on are not residents. So we need to protect the outcome of the election by ensuring that we say, we'll give you a voter's roll to all political parties. If you have any objections, do it by a date that must be prescribed in the timetable. And if you don't do it by then, don't come back, because there has to be certainty in government. Otherwise, then, you know, we're becoming a country where a government can change because someone has been to court. Now, a very important addition that we want to introduce in the law is an introduction of Section 16(4) to the Electoral Act, and that is to provide that the absence of an address or an error in the segment of the certified roll does not invalidate the voter's roll in question. Because this is important. Yes, Section 16(3) does say that we need to collect the addresses and place them on the voter's roll, and so on. But we are aware that South Africa is not human settlements are uneven in South Africa. So it's important that we leave scope for as long as that person is resident in the ward. It should be sufficient. So if we don't have an address for a particular person on the voter's roll, it should not invalidate the voter's roll and therefore invalidate the election. So that's what we're trying to, again, we're trying to protect the outcome of elections by introducing this. Then the next one is a consequential amendment, so I won't waste time. I'm conscious that we don't have a lot of time. Now, remember, we are saying we will give political parties an opportunity to object and we will give them the voter's roll to object. Now, on election day, if a person is on the voter's roll, you can object against that person, but not on the basis that they are not in the correct segment of the voter's roll. For instance, you can object and say this person is impersonating himself or herself. He is actually not Sy Mamabolo. He is the brother to Sy Mamabolo, but not on the basis that this person shouldn't be on this voter's roll. So that's what we want to introduce. Now, we also wish to amend Section 8 of the Electoral Act, which provides that the Chief Electoral Officer may not register a person who has been declared by a High Court to be of an unsound mind or is detained under the Mental Health Care Act. We've received a representation from a number of institutions doing work in this area. We've also received a senior counsel opinion to say if we were to be challenged in the Constitutional Court on discriminating against these classes of people, that our law won't stand constitutional muster. Now, we've debated the matter and we came to the conclusion that it's the people affected are not so many as to influence the outcome of an election anyway. Plus, the fact that if a person has occasional schizophrenia or those types of illnesses, they're still able to form a political decision as to who they want to vote, and it's therefore unnecessary to have a discrimination of that nature. And then we also wish to amend Section 27 of the Electoral Act to provide for the electronic submission of lists of candidates. Currently, we've only introduced the electronic submission of lists of candidates for local government. We now need to do it for national and provincial elections. At this point, perhaps it's important that I say the following. The Commission has looked at the letter that we received from the chairperson of the committee. And the view that they've taken is that, as a commission, they are not averse to a quota on nominations. However, they think that political parties will be given a chance to offer comments, and if they agree, then a provision can be introduced. That's one option that the commission wishes to place on the table. Secondly, we will obviously bring this draft bill to Parliament, and if all parties agree again, we can introduce a quota provision in committee, in the portfolio committee on Home Affairs. And then amendment of Section 40 of the Electoral Act deals with if you make a mistake or you change your mind, you've already been given ballots, but you say, I had exercised the wrong choice. You can return those ballots to the presiding officer and ask for new ballots for as long as you've not put them into the box, because once you put them into the box, you have voted. You must go home. So Section 75 and Section 108, Section 75 of the Municipal Electoral Act and Section 108 of the Electoral Act, it deals with the political activities on election day. We're proposing that the same provisions that apply on election day must also apply on special voting dates. And then lastly, Chairperson, I think, is Section 47 of the Municipal Electoral Act, and that has to do with the stamping of the ID after you voted. We know that we now have smart cards. There's close to 6.8 million smart cards which are in circulation, so we can't stamp a smart card. So the requirement to stamp the ID would have to go off the statute book because it's no longer practical. Now, Chair, as I indicated, that the Commission suggests by way of possible interventions for this committee, either through the various parties in the National Party Liaison Committee, because they need to make submissions to us as part of our consultation process, or possibly using the opportunity when the bill is before the Portfolio Committee. And it will be published by the Portfolio Committee, and submissions will be requested. But because you are all members of Parliament, you could influence the introduction of a provision on quota at that stage.
Chairperson? Yes. I wanted to suggest that it's good. I mean, we are politicians. This is relevant for us. But it should go to the proper committee, which is Home Affairs. And I think the main matter was for us to discuss the quota. But Chairperson, flag that. What I wanted to talk about, you know, when you are dealing with IEC laws, you should understand
where how we live in South Africa. There's problem of unemployment, and there's no way that it's possible for us, you know, as the working class, as the elite, to actually have an address or have a word where they will be. But nobody knows, for people who are looking for work, they can be in Cape Town now, but during elections they are in Rustenburg. And it's not because they want to go there. It's because they went there to go look for a job and that. So I'm saying, when we look into those laws, let's consider the real South African situation. The problem is that our officials, chairperson, they go somewhere else to get information on South Africa. Yes, what you are saying about Amajo Jombe is true, but we are not in those permanent addresses. It can be applicable and relevant to us, but not to the majority of South Africans. And chairperson, I would suggest that, like you said, let's take this thing to our political parties. We'll see how we can fight this, because we are saying 50-50 should be a policy in government, and we want to see that in our own IEC laws. But I think as politicians, we have to find another platform to go and debate this. But yeah, thanks for the presentation, Chair. Thank you.
You know, you must let the procedure go on. We've got three questions here, and we know what to say. We have called the IEC because, one, whether there are any plans in place to review the Electoral Act to ensure gender parity. Okay? The second one, if yes, will the review be operational when 29 national provincial are conducted? The third one, if not, why has the IEC not recommended the review of amendment of current legislation? These are the questions that are important. There are a lot of things that we can get from IEC in terms of the work that we are doing and the rituals that we want to do. But we are interested in this, the three. If you haven't done so, we were just waiting for you to wrap up. Then we are going to say to you, maybe someone wants to say something. Because you are not yet ready, that is where now the committee is going to come in, and maybe we are going to deal with this in another manner, because by now it is quite evident to everybody that it's not a question of only now. It's quite some time that we've been talking about this. SADC, everywhere, people are talking about this. Every time we have elections, we have talked about zebra. In all the other countries, they've adopted this from us in South Africa. And they are even now, you know, are so advanced. But Tina, we are going down. That is why we are so concerned. We thought IEC also is also sensitive to that fact. But it seems, no, it's work as usual.
Yeah.
You see? Somebody wants to come in. Pet?
Yeah, thank you very much, and thank you, IEC, for respecting us. And maybe you must be start aligning with the Constitution. That is why, Mama, you have been in the IEC since 1994. I think you would have, by now, changed the Act. You should have come for recommendation to change the Act, because it surprises us that people sit there and say they want to transform South Africa, but they themselves are not transforming South Africa. Who's going to transform if you don't transform? It's only African men that are going to be appointed in positions in IEC. It's not African men that are going to be appointed there. Ne? Is it? It's not only white women that are going to be appointed in position of leadership in that IEC. Because, why do I say that? You must remember, women are not homogeneously oppressed. Women were oppressed in terms of their race. It was white people and black people and Indians, colored and Africans at the lower level. And for you to pull them up to that equilibrium, it means that few white women have to get an opportunity to get there. You must elevate them in terms of their demographics. But we must always come and tell you, when you have been elevated by the same government
that democratic government that wants to give me an opportunity. You see? So what I'm saying to you as leadership of IEC, your responsibility is to lift other racial groups, especially the Africans in particular. And that was our democratic revolution all about, to make sure that the Africans that are there, down there, to be lifted up to the same level. Then you will be reducing unemployment, one. Two, the issue of political parties. It's not that you need to negotiate with them. It is a prerequisite of the Constitution that we have equal rights. Women have the right to be there in all political groups. And you have to help us by making it a legislation of the IEC to ensure that no party comes there with no women. If you take FF, for instance, they have never given us a woman representative, even at council level. Why is that? Because there are white women that are voting that FF. They must go and find them. In Finland, in Norway actually, not Finland, in Norway, people, when their government says they must put 25% of women in their boards as chairperson, they said there are no women that are qualified. How many years that there's no way being equal, an equal society? For donkey years, because patriarchy, it's not something that can happen automatically. You have to force people to liberate others. If you don't do that, they will never liberate other people. So legislation is the only way that can help us get women into those positions. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and let me welcome the presentation also. I want the IEC, as there will be amending some of these laws, also to look into the situation wherein we only, or the parties only concentrate on the zebra or the 50-50 during the elections. And during the term, when they replace, they don't care about it. That must be like that, carried on throughout the term, so that there will be no situation where we'll find that it was 50, but all of a sudden women are at 20%. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chair. But thanks for the presentation from the IEC. But I think the IEC should also advocate the issue of the representation of disabled persons,
yes,
in those political,
yes,
parties, because what is happening now is only one political party, which is the ruling party, that has members with special needs in parliament, but other parties, they don't even care about the representation of people with disabilities, but they do want the votes from them. Thank you.
Chairperson, no, thank you very much. I think to answer the in a more clinical way the questions, yes, there is a review that we've done. That review of the legislation is coming to Parliament, and it will be before the Portfolio Committee. It will be processed by the Portfolio Committee on Home Affairs. Thirdly, we do have scope. As this caucus, we do have scope as the Commission to craft a provision that will be mutually acceptable to all key role players in terms of the candidates. What has come up here today is also, it's not just about gender parity, it's also about persons with special needs and so on. So we will take that message back. And in the consultations with parties, and when we come before the Portfolio Committee, we will make those matters known.
Okay.
Yes. Now, thank you very much for the opportunity, Randa Woha. Thank you.
Thank you very much, everybody.
Sure.
At least we have
done what we're supposed to do. Siyabulela. We're not going to